Welcome to episode 186 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Why the Last Man Unmanned by Brian K. Vaughan. And now the cast begins. What brought this about?
I was just, our friend Alex always uses his Vampire Jubilee HeroClix piece when we play. Like, literally every time we play, he uses that piece.
Yep.
And then I was listening to, and there's this X-Men podcast I listened to, where they talked about Curse of the Mutants a little bit, so. So then I was like, hey, we should read that. That sounds like it would be funny to read. So, here we are.
Oh, is there a Nine Rings of the Wu-Tang trade paperback?
I have no idea.
Because we're going to do that one next.
Yeah, so I had just put this Dracula one down as in the brainstorming section, but then Andy and I were talking before you came on the call about what we should do next, and I was like, hey, why don't we do that thing that I just added? So now we're going to do it.
Okay, you guys ready?
Oh, you're very pleased with yourself, I can tell.
You ready?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, everybody, welcome to another testicular episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hello.
No giggles for testicular.
Well, you giggled before you even said it.
Yeah.
We knew it was coming.
Anyway, speaking of testicles, this week we read Why the Last Man Unmanned.
And so, Andy,
huh?
What? Let me ask you a question. So, why did we read this comic this week?
Because this is the last comic in our Comics for Ladies series.
Oh.
And
oh.
And this is like, this for like, what, one decade, two decades? I don't know. For a long time has been the go-to comic. This and Fable. When somebody asks the question of a comic shop owner or an internet forum or Reddit, what comic should I buy my wife, girlfriend, significant other, lady friend to get her into comics? And this is like one of the originals, one of the prototypical ones. This is like been on every list for so long that now it's not even put on the lists anymore because it's assumed that you know you should be giving her Why the Last Man. And so we had to read this one. We've already read Fables, and you can go listen to our Fables episode if you want our take on that one. But I couldn't let us go to 200 episodes without reading Why the Last Man. This I think this is the, I don't know, in my mind, this is the book that really made Brian K. Vaughan like Brian K. Vaughan, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Because like everything he does now is really good. And what else have we read of here? We read Saga and Runaways, and I think just those two. But I feel like other stuff as well.
Private Eye.
Yeah, Private Eye. There you go. And they've all been really, really good. But I think this is the one that really like pushed him forward in the comics industry and was like, look how fucking awesome this guy can be.
Mm-hmm.
So we read the first trade of that.
Well, I totally cut you off as you were describing that.
It's okay. Yeah, so
go ahead and...
Written by Brian K. Vaughan, art by Pia Guerra and Jose Marzan Jr. And that's all you cut me off from. So it's okay. Oh. You didn't miss too much. It's all right. Issues 1-5. I think I said that already. I don't know. Anyway, just said it now too. So as a female reader, Jen. You're so useful for us these three episodes. Do you
You're
feel
really
like
shining.
This comic do you feel like this comic was written for you?
No, not particularly.
Okay.
You know, I feel like maybe it was just that it was super hyped this whole time. I've been hearing about it for years and years and everyone's like, oh, it's so great. I picked it up and I'm just like, eh. Okay, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I think I had the same thing with, fuck, what's that movie? Forrest Gump.
Really?
Yeah, everybody hyped the shit out of that for me, and I never watched it. It was in theaters, and I finally watched it when it came out on DVD, and I was like, this sucks. This is so stupid. It's just this idiot going around the country, like, getting lucky with his life. This is dumb. I hated it. And to this day, I still think it's just a mediocre movie.
Wow.
Even though I know objectively it's probably a great film for most people, but I feel like I know your pain because it was hyped so much when it was out.
Yeah, I can't buy it. Like, especially since it's hyped as, like, this is what women like. Like, if it wasn't hyped like that, I think I'd be more enthusiastic, but then I just start, like, ticking off things on my finger. Like, okay, if you're really looking for, like, you know, a feminist perspective, why is the main character male and all the antagonists female? Honestly, that's not something I normally even care about.
Yeah,
but here, right. Like, I was told I was supposed to care, so I'm kind of like, like, the Amazons, and then the sister who goes berserk and joins them, and then the mom's kind of a dipshit, and, like, there's all these fucking crazy women in this story, and everyone's crazy and unpleasant. And just the very basic premise, like, okay, I understand that you're going to have huge infrastructure problems if half the world's population dies, but at the same time, I have a really hard time believing that there are not women who know how to operate, like, phone networks and electricity and water and like, basic things.
So this is interesting, then. Did you guys read the singles or the trade or...
I bought the trade from Comic.
I read the trade.
See, because I had the singles, and at the end of the first issue, there's a really awesome list of statistics that Brian K. Vaughan put in there. And it's like 99% of all world leaders are men, no longer exist. And it's just like the percentages of what doesn't exist anymore. And one of them was like infrastructure related, like phone and internet lines and that kind of stuff. And it was like 80-something%. And so, you know, like, yeah, 15% of them were women, but that's... The workforce just got intensely slashed, and the system's not built for that kind of a small workforce to operate it, and it's just a matter of shit breaking. And I mean, it's not like women don't know how to do it, and it's not like there are women around that can't teach other women how to do it in time, but it's like the immediacy of even, let alone gender-wise, if you just take half of the workforce out of the world, a lot of shit's just gonna break, and that's being very, very benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, you know? I just also feel like I didn't get to see the statistics, but if they were worldwide, wouldn't that also just be a misinterpretation? Because it's going to be skewed by country. Like, in Saudi Arabia, women aren't going to be operating, you know, the telecom networks. Yeah, but maybe in Canada, like, everything should work fine. But we got the impression that everything was fucked everywhere, which doesn't make sense in, like, especially countries like Norway or Sweden. You know, the Scandinavian places, even like Canada, the U.S., Western Europe, I would think that even if women are still a minority in most fields, that there would be enough left to keep things basically running.
Yeah, yeah. And I wish I hadn't left them at work. I left my comics at work where I read them during my lunch. And I could have read some of them were United States based, some of them were international based. But one of the ones I found really interesting was like the percentage of people of women armed in the military, and how there's only three countries that really allow women to have combat experience as part of their military. And only two countries require women to do military service. And the longest one is Israel. Which is why you get the Israeli woman being badass, and why you get Israel, like, immediately conquering the entire Middle East, because in most of those theological countries, those women are taught to not do anything. Like, not that they're not taught anything, they're taught to not do anything. To go and clean the clothes and get the food and cook the dinner, but that's it. And so if Israel is the only country in that part of the world that really trains a military force that includes women for a year and a half of mandatory service, they're going to be kind of badass after this. So it was really interesting how he used some of the numbers to back up what he was doing in the comic, and I really wish I hadn't left him at work.
I think part of the thing, too, is that probably when half the world's population disappears, it's going to be pretty jarring for those people who are left, regardless of their gender.
Yeah,
certainly. Oh,
yeah.
And I think that's why we see so many of the people getting like, like flipping out and going insane, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't think necessarily that all of the women that are part of the Amazons gang would just turn that way on their own. I think they're certainly being influenced by a charismatic,
leader.
A charismatic leader.
I guess I just have a problem with apocalyptic settings, because, I mean, I have the same issue with, like, Walking Dead, you know, or Mad Max. It's so unrealistic to me that that would happen. And I don't know, maybe it would, but it's a barrier to entry.
Well, I don't think all of those apocalypses are necessarily created equal. I think in Walking Dead is the same as necessarily like Why the Last Man, where, you know, everyone just seems to have, oh no, I guess there were bodies everywhere, huh?
Yeah.
The guys just all died. But still, I mean, the bodies weren't returning to life and, you know,
yeah,
coming after.
But it's, I just mean, like,
it's not as paranoid of an atmosphere.
There's, I think, it's part of the apocalypse trope to basically say that humans are fucking savages at heart and they do horrible shit to each other when they get the chance and society collapses. And I have a little disbelief in that viewpoint.
Yeah, and actually, but I gotta say, that's one of the things I appreciate about this comic is it doesn't go full bore that direction. It goes kind of half and half, a little bit more that direction. And I have to spoil it that as the comic goes on, things leaven out. You kind of get the sense that in this first trade, it's not so much that we're in suddenly a dystopia, it's that there's mass panic and half of the world has probably had a traumatic experience. Like Hero, who was looking at the guy as he bled out of his eyes and mouth and ears and died in front of her. Like, that's a traumatic experience. And that experience is probably what drove her to join the Amazons, to try and find some kind of answers for somebody who would probably be their charismatic leader. And we get more mundane examples of it, too. Like, the woman at the monument who's just talking with Yorick about, like, all of the artists that died, all of the rock stars. And, like, I feel like that would be 90% of people's reactions is, holy shit, this sucks. What the fuck are we going to do now? And there's also, like, the other example is the other example that's both of them one is the garbage truck driver woman who's, like, when she thinks she's talking to another woman is all, like, yeah, we're in it together now. You need a hand? You need a lift? Sorry, I almost hit you. Like, really, really chummy. And she doesn't get crazy until she finds out York's a dude and is like, I need to eat, motherfucker. You're coming with me. But you get that sense of, like, there are the people who break and there are the people who bend and come back and are like, we're going to have to figure some way out of this and some meaning in life after this.
Which is why I appreciated the mother, by the way, because she did that. And, I mean, yeah, I get what you guys are saying. I guess, maybe I just didn't care about the setting. There's something very meh about it. I just...
Yeah, I'm not necessarily trying to say that you're wrong. More of, you know, like a devil's advocate type of thing. I do find, I mean, there is a bit of sensationalism in all these apocalyptic type settings, you know. There definitely will be pockets and people will have of this kind of insanity, and there will be people whose coping mechanisms are misfiring or something. But in general, I think people will want to organize and try to do something. I mean, there's other post-apocalyptic stories where this kind of thing doesn't necessarily happen. You know, I'm trying to think of a pop culture or I have an example in my mind, but I'm trying to think of one that's less obscure than the one in my head. There's a novel called Footfall where these aliens basically invade Earth, but they don't really, like, they kind of leave the humans alone. And so the infrastructure gets destroyed, but, like, in L.A., people kind of come together and they have gardens and they build, like, greenhouses and stuff. And, you know, they try to, cope. But, you know, things do eventually get crazy when the humans decide to fight back. But
yeah, but there's probably, like, that same sense of, like, well, let's see if we can live with this. And then when they find out that they can't, then they end up having to fight back.
Yeah, well, I forget. It's been a while since I read it. But in the case of in Why the Last Man, I think there's a certain amount of fear about the future, more than just, like, how are we going to take care of infrastructure and stuff like that. And we get that with
his
doctor
mom?
Dr. Man or Professor Man, I forget what her title is exactly. But she, you know, when Agent 355 asks her, why are you curing breast cancer? And she's like, well, if we're going to be the last generation of humans, might as well live a long, healthy life, you know? She has, you know, one person who is an expert at cloning has written off humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably because she is panicking to a certain degree, you know? That's her way. She has come to terms with the situation, and her way of dealing with it is by not dealing with it. directly.
Yeah, but I mean, also at the same time, we're kind of told that, like, every Y chromosome on the planet, except for Yorick and his monkey, has just been destroyed. Mm-hmm. So, like, even if she wanted to clone a male, there's no source DNA. You can't get it off of a dead male, because it would have been decayed. I mean...
Right, but you could clone more women to continue the species.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
There could be one gender...
Her freak out weirded me out, too, how she was so convinced that she caused it.
Yeah, that was...
That...
At first, I didn't understand, like, as I was reading that section, I thought, okay, is she going to have some kind of pseudo-scientific explanation for it? And then when I realized that she had gone from, like, scientific to kind of the opposite.
Superstitious.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she thought that by playing God, God had punished the human race.
Well, and that's I appreciated that being in there, because that is a fear that was alive and well when this comic was written. I mean, this is when cloning was in an uncertain area, when they were cloning the sheep and stuff, you know? What was the sheep's name? Dolly.
I think this is a little bit after that.
Is it after that?
Well, I mean, here this is like stem cell research is kind of a burgeoning field.
Yeah.
Too, right? So...
So there's all that kind of like, are we playing God? What happens when we play God? And so, I mean, as a person who probably works in that field, I imagine Dr. Mann would have heard that criticism a lot and just written it off, right?
Yeah, I think she does address the fact that protesters kind of thing. I forget the exact line, but it's in issue 5.
And the other thing too is we don't know what happened exactly with her birth. We get that moment where it's counting down, and it's like 5 seconds earlier, 4, 3, 2, 1 seconds earlier. I think she's like the 2 seconds earlier or something. And her baby's coming out, and the doctor says something like, that's not right, or what the hell is this? Something along those lines. Like, the doctor's taken aback and confused. And we don't know what happens in that moment. Like, what if she gave birth to a boy, and the doctor pulled the boy out, and the boy was already bleeding from the eyes and mouth and orifices, and the doctor was then too. And then that's... God, if you're Dr. Mann, that is the most traumatic experience I imagine a person could ever have.
Seriously.
And so however crazy she wants to get, I am completely... she can go whatever deep end she wants to go.
At the same time, I don't know, I just... The way her character was acting at first, like David said, she was, you know, kind of doing this thing and she was more science-y. Like, even after that traumatic experience, if she has a rational personality at the core, shouldn't some of that remain intact, and she should be, like, maybe thinking that it'd be impossible for her to cause such a thing?
Well, that certainly would be the rational way to respond to the situation, but I think she's having, like, a double whammy of trauma, because first, you know, she thinks that her child... She finds out that her child has not survived.
We're assuming. I mean, otherwise it would be with her. I'm assuming. We don't know what happens in that.
Well, no, I mean, it's a boy.
No, yeah, we do know it was a boy.
So I think I think assuming that the child is dead is a safe assumption. But, you know, she says, you know, if you look at the last panel of that issue, well, it's not the last panel, but towards the end, where after the men in the room have died, she says, oh God, this is my fault. But how, I mean, at that point, she probably, I mean, she can't know that men all over the world have died, right? I mean, she's in the hospital bed still.
Yeah.
For sure the men in the room have died. So maybe she felt like her initial reaction is that, you know, the child's death and the death of the people in the room with her is her fault for some reason. And then as she goes out into the world, discovers the scope of what's happened, you know, she thinks that she just puts that... I mean, the trauma she's experiencing in her room is the same as that's out in the world.
Yeah.
And because she's already in her mind equated what's happened in the room to her, and since it's the same thing everywhere else, maybe she just tacks it onto her grief, you know?
Hmm. Okay.
I mean, it's like total speculation, right?
No, but it makes sense.
Yeah,
and
it does.
Also, I also really like the way that Brian K. Vaughan kind of built in the idea that the way a lot of people are dealing with this trauma or not dealing with this trauma is that they're thinking in some way they caused it. I mean, Agent 355 says that, right? Doesn't she at some point say, like, everybody thinks that they caused it or something like that? And she says, even I do. You know, like, I have some reason I think it might have been me.
Oh, yeah, right. That's when she's trying to calm the doctor down after she meets Yorick, right?
Yeah, and, well, I mean, I imagine she thinks she caused it by taking that amulet out of the country in which it was supposed to stay.
Right. That's true.
That's what I imagine she is.
I totally forgot the significance of the amulet after, yeah, like, after that issue.
I don't remember in the long run if it's significant or not, but I remember, like, reading that and being like, yeah, something terrible is about to happen, you know? And, I mean, it's stupid. It's stupid. It's a rational mind. It's a fucking little clay amulet or something like that, right? There's no possible way it had anything to do with this worldwide catastrophe. There's nothing rational about that, you know? But there's going to be that inkling in the back of Agent 355's mind that just maybe. Just maybe it really was her, you know?
And well, so she might know something, right? Because she did go for the amulet specifically.
Yeah, so we don't know, aside from all of this stuff, what the significance of that amulet was.
And certainly I feel like Agent 355 is the person who's the most with it. Like, she's keeping it together the best.
Yeah.
But that might just be that might have something to do with her
training.
Her training, whatever.
It might, yeah, she might just be falling back on all of her soldier training and not letting the real personality within her even bother to surface. It might be a little bit of a, not dissociative anything, not quite that extreme, but just, I have this professional exterior that I've been trained to use, and I'm just going to leave it on now.
And she has a mission. A lot of the other characters do not have missions, right? I mean, what is the Amazon group, what's their purpose is to what?
Well,
maybe before Yorick. Before Yorick, they realized that Yorick is out there. What was their purpose?
I have a feeling that most of the Amazons are the crazy feminists of today.
Certainly they would be susceptible to that type of...
Yeah, I think the people, when you walk around the world, who are the crazy feminists... I don't just mean, like, the people who post on Tumblr. I mean, like, the ones who talk about the patriarchy being the source of evil and we need to overthrow all governments run by men, and if only Remen ran the world, then there would be global peace, like the far extreme crazy feminists. I mean, as soon as this happens, everything they've believed and been saying for years is instantly validated, and so they go off the deep end. It's like if you have a born again actually see Christ. I mean, sure, they bought back in, but if it happens, they're really gonna fucking buy in, you know. Mm-hmm. And so now it's like, yeah, let's all in 100%. Everything I've been saying has been right. There's been some divine thing that validates all of the thoughts that I've been having. Yes, this is the right way to go. And then not only are they validated, but they feel righteous. They feel like they're doing it on the side of fate. And so it's really easy to see how people who might have been thinking things that would have led to this happening can just slide into insanity. But it's interesting, too, the way that, like, that group and their zealotry, and because they look righteously affirmed, can draw in other people like Hero, who I can tell really does not want to be there and isn't 100% comfortable with that, but...
Well, and I think we can... I mean, the only indication that we get that she had any problem with men is that, you know, Yorick... When he's talking about her to Agent 355, he says she's had bad luck with relationships.
Yeah, and we get from the other EMTs too. They talk shit. They slut shame her, you know.
Yeah, but she seems to be genuinely happy with her boyfriend before he explodes or like melts, you know.
Yeah, God, I can't believe the trauma that she would have in that moment. Jesus.
Well, a lot of the women we see, like Agent 355, the guy she's with in the airplane, like,
yeah,
barfs blood all over the windscreen. I don't know. It couldn't have been, it certainly couldn't have been a pleasant experience for anybody.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. But I kind of want to, so, all right, I'm half talking out of my ass here. I don't understand where this comes from, but I've read articles and I've listened to podcasts for women, specifically targeted to women, but I have a lot of time on my hands, so I listen to these podcasts anyway. And I was listening to one podcast talk about how there is a confidence problem in American society where women who get promotions feel like, did I deserve this? Did they really mean me? Like, there's a pervasive confidence problem in the world with women, especially in Western world. And I like the way that that kind of translates into the way that Brian K. Vaughan is characterizing a lot of the women in here. And a lack of confidence in their abilities has just been redoubled. Agent 355, no. But, like, the director of agriculture, no, secretary of agriculture, like, just wants to go and hide. And then when she's told she's supposed to be president, she's like, you can't be serious. No, 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 I couldn't possibly. And Dr. Mann, I mean, she does it basically by thinking that it was her fault. Like, that she had done something wrong. When we all can agree, rationally, that's ridiculous. And she's a rational person. But it plays back into that lack of confidence that I must have been the one to screw this up. I did this. It was my fault. I did something wrong. I didn't do the things that needed to happen. I don't know. And it's kind of in a lot of places here. But I also appreciate that as that kind of levels out, as people realize that, no, this is the world we have, and it's not just me. Dr. Mann will realize that people are dead everywhere, and there's no way that her clone baby killed somebody in China. She will learn that. And there are people who learn it faster and people who learn it slower. But in between, you get people like the Republican who are just thoroughly confused. And I like that in this one trade, we see the spectrum of how these people are dealing with their trauma in a way that I believe, as a white man, I believe is consistent with the way women think in American society, which I know it's impossible for me to know how women think because I'm a man, so that's why I preface this with I'm probably talking out of my ass. But, I don't know, I really appreciated the way that you can see the spectrum of trauma and coping and all of that within five issues and still get cool chase scenes. And crazy Amazons. Yep. So what did you guys think of the fucking president of the fucking goddamn United States of America? I thought she was baller as shit.
Yeah, once she... you know, once she got to the White House, she really owned that role, you know?
Yeah. She stepped up to the plate, so I think she's going to end up doing a good job.
Yeah. She reminds me a little bit of President... Star. Yeah, Rosalind. I can't remember what her last name is. Is Rosalind her last name or her first name?
Fuck, I don't remember.
Last name.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the first place my mind went. But it also, you know, she also looks like this is kind of an obscure pull. But she looks like the president from the X-Men cartoon in the first few episodes. It's a female president.
Yeah, yeah.
She looks exactly like this lady.
That's awesome.
That's who I immediately thought of visually was that lady. Like, there's in the Night of the Sentinels episode, there's a part where she's like on an elliptical machine and she's like telling Gyrick that he's losing his funding for the Sentinel program or something. Sorry.
Yeah, I want to say too, I think aside from her stepping up to plate and being awesome, I think she's significant in this first trade that she shows the reader that this isn't going to become a dystopia just because the men are dead. Because that's, to today, being the president of the United States is still something that more than half of the country believes a woman cannot do. Like, today, half of the country, more than half of the country believes that a woman cannot be an effective president.
Okay.
And here, we have a woman being an effective president. This is kind of like, this character is Brian K. Vaughan showing the audience, it'll be okay, just because the men are dead. Doesn't mean women can't do these things. So while you see that right now there's a mass panic and right now it is a little bit dystopian, it's okay. We'll pull through. People will step up to the plate and do things that previously they've been told they couldn't do. You know? That's, I think, Jen, more than anything, that's what makes me think this isn't a dystopian story. Is it's not, hope isn't lost among everyone. Just the people who can't cope with the situation, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my only thing about it is just it has to start dystopian, right? Because they have to have a conflict. So maybe that will resolve, especially now that they have a decent president. And, you know, like, obviously they have to sort out power structures because all the governments are messed up. And, like, when you lose half a population, you stop functioning to some degree.
Yeah.
But everyone was just so unpleasant. That was my big gripe. Like...
Yeah, and even when you got somebody who was pleasant at the beginning, they end up being dickish somehow. Even York's fucking mom, like...
Yeah, his mom is kind of an asshole. But, I mean, I understand. I think she actually has more, good sense in her than most people in this comic.
Yeah.
It really, like, with Yorick, I have to go to Australia. It's like,
yeah.
Shut up. Just stop.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I would like Yorick a lot better if he wasn't pining the whole time after his girlfriend. And it's, okay, obviously, you know, you have someone you love, they're halfway across the world, some kind of apocalypse happens, you worry a lot. But the setup before that, where, you know, he's proposing to her over the phone and he kind of is a little neurotic about it, like, he just, that set him up as an unpleasant character for me.
Yeah, and I don't relate with his fear that she's not okay. And I mean, it's, obviously you're right, Jen. You know, you have a significant other on the other side of the world and an apocalypse happens, you worry, right? But maybe as the reader, we're privy to a special point of view where we see her climbing through the Australian outback with nobody else in sight. For all we know, it's another fucking week before she even realizes this has happened, right? I mean, there's literally no other human being in Australia in a frame with her. So she's obviously perfectly capable of handling herself out in the wild. But again, that's the same problem we've had with every other character in this book, is its rationality gone thrown out the wind because of what has happened. But he is not a smart... Yeah, why the fuck would you go? Or, I mean, you would go, you would try to find out, but, I mean, would you just, like, immediately throw yourself across the country for this?
Yeah, and when the president is like, don't worry, we'll find your girlfriend. Maybe trust the president a little.
Yeah, but then this isn't exactly the same America either.
True. Maybe that's more reason to trust the president.
Yeah, I guess. Well, yeah. Then if you're Yorick and you can sneak into the fucking White House, you're like, yeah, security's gone down, those shit are pretty bad.
And then there's the monkey. You know, yeah. In any other situation, I'd totally be down with a pet monkey. It seems really dumb here.
Aw.
I don't like I'm grumpy about this comic. This comic and its monkey and its Yorick. I'm just...
Yeah, I was gonna ask what you guys thought of Yorick, but I guess we know the answer.
I mean, okay, I'm half and half, right? Like, I appreciate that Brian K. Vaughan, when he tried to write real female characters for this comic, he recognized that was important, but he also recognized it was very important that his male character be real, too. Because I think if you take 90% of the men portrayed in comics and put this in this situation, they'd be like, hell yeah, time to stud up a new generation. You know? Like, put Superman here. I mean, he wouldn't be all bro-ish about it, but he would be like, well, it's the responsibility of my role.
It's the American way.
It's the American way to fuck as many women as possible, right? even Batman, I'm sure. You know? Oh, God. Hal Jordan? That's the first thing he would do. Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner even, you know? Like, 90% of men in comics, I think, would jump at it, right? But I think those are fictional characters, you know? And I think it would be just as wrong to have them act that way as it would be to make all of the women left in the world like the Amazons are portrayed in this comic. Because that's a small minority of fanatics. And the truth is, I think most men in the world are probably like Brian, or probably like Yorick. Like, they would worry, and they would care about their wife. And, I mean, if this happened, I don't know what the fuck I would do, but I know my first thought wouldn't be, all right, got an excuse to cheat on my wife. You know? And I really appreciate that. I really appreciate that there's just as much a real male character in here as he understood that it was important to have the real female characters. That said, he's whiny and annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, stupid.
You know, it's his coping mechanism, I feel like, you know. He's, like, he's cracking jokes. He's, like, if we want to equate him to any, you know, well-known superhero, he's like Peter Parker, you know. He's in this shitty situation, but he's cracking jokes with 355, you know. And
yeah, that's right. That's a good example. Little... Peter Parker wouldn't stud up.
Yeah, seriously.
Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off.
No, just, like, meeting, like, you know, he's cracking, like, rhymey jokes and stuff with her. He says, like, that's the plan, Fran, and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And so I think that Yorick's I agree with you guys. Yorick's portrayal in this comic is not an inaccurate, you know, it's not inaccurate. There's a good chance somebody would act this way, you know, in this situation. Right?
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
And that's the thing. I mean, he's very real. But
he's too real.
There are unlikable real people, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's a well-written character. And most of the characters are well-written. It's only, like, the really crazy Amazons that I don't buy because I'm like, this isn't Mad Max.
Sorry, go ahead, Jen. I was going to ask you something else.
Oh, sure. Like, Yorick and Hiro, and especially, you can tell I like them all the best. Like, almost all the characters are very well written. I'm a little dubious about Dr. Man. It's just, you know how, like, we read Saga, and the main characters are so sympathetic? Like, you just want them to win?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want Yorick to win.
Ah, that's what I was going to ask you, if you found him sympathetic.
I don't. Like, I do understand his concern for his girlfriend, maybe fiancé. Totally. At the same time, I feel like he's just so... I think you're right, like, it is his coping mechanism, but he's so nonchalant about it that I want to, like, grab him by the shoulders and shake him.
Do you want him to get to Australia?
I can't say I care if he makes it or not. Like, I'm pretty ambivalent about his quest. And I can't remember his girlfriend's name, which is not a good sign.
Beth. Her name is Beth.
Yeah.
Beth.
So, I gotta say, this is the second time... Well, I guess this is the third time I've read this trade. The first time I read this trade, I was single. And the second time I read this trade, I was single. And the third time, this time I am not. The first time I read this trade, I had a very similar reaction to you, Jen. I don't have a problem with dystopian stuff, per se. But man, this comic really, really grated me the wrong way. And I wanted to mention the single thing, because one of the things I didn't believe was that York wouldn't stud up. Right? But this comic really, really, really bugged me the first time I read it. Because the first trade, there's so much gender stuff dropped everywhere. And I think I was looking for it with a fine-tooth comb, because I had gotten the same buildup that you had gotten, Jen, that this was the prototypical comic book for women, you know? And when you hear that, you kind of look for feminist stuff. You look for gendered things. And I think that that's not fair, looking back on my earlier reading of it. Because a lot of the things that I notice in here are just turns of phrase. The way we say things just happen to be gendered. And sometimes it's just the way we use words. The way that the English language doesn't have a gender-neutral pronoun. Sometimes it's just that. And other times it is PC stuff, like congresswoman versus representative, you know? But I remember having a specific conversation about that scene, about congresswoman versus representative. I remember getting very annoyed, because that's a perfectly fine example of gendered speech and why gender matters and men and women and all that. Except then the guy is he's a dick about it. And then he, like, aside from being just a dick about it, he's a dick about it on a gender level.
It's heavy-handed.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, on the one hand, like, you can be heavy-handed showing realistic portrayals of gender bias in a culture that we're familiar with, in American culture. Like, that's awesome, and that's great. That's great foundation work for the rest of this comic, and awesome, do that. But I remember reading the first time, that guy was one of the things that made me stop reading this. Because I just was like, all right, doing this is one thing, then portraying men in this situation as complete jackasses felt like a blanket was getting thrown on, unless you are a giant soft pussy like Yorick. That was my first interpretation of this comic. He's like, okay, you're either a giant pussy like Yorick or you're a douchey misogynist. Is that all the men we get here? That's kind of all the men we get in this comic, isn't it? Okay, yeah, that's men. Okay, fine, thanks. Just was so pissed the first time I read it. But the second time I read it through to the second trade, and then I read it to the end. So I would say give it another try, but I'm also completely validating probably 85% of the reasons why you didn't like reading this. Because you're right, it is super heavy-handed. That was a perfect word to use.
Yeah, it was just, it was a strange setup, because it, every single one of those countdown scenes was someone talking about gender in a serious way, except maybe when Agent 355 was trying to get the amulet. I don't think it happened there, but in every one of the scenes, you know, there's the congresswoman thing, Yorick's conversation with his girlfriend, and I wish I actually had the trade in front of me. I left it in the other room.
Oh, and the reporters in Israel, too, are really heavy-handed as well.
Yeah.
Because they're basically saying, hey, Toots, what are you doing in the military? And it's like, fucking really? Come on, guys.
And then she's like, roar about it.
Well, and even then when she's like, I want to fight for my country because it's what's right. They're like, whoa, women aren't supposed to say that.
Yeah, it's just...
Assholes.
So, the comic storms in like, I'm gonna prove a point. And I'm not sure that it... Like, it mellows out later, definitely. But it was that introduction where we get shown each of these characters as, you know, in this representation of gender dynamics. And I don't know, it felt very much like I was about to be shown a point about gender and patriarchy and feminism and what all that means. And I was kind of like, I don't like this setup. I'd rather just be shown instead of being told I'm about to be shown.
See, and that's exactly why on my third reading, I appreciate this comic on a different level, because I went into it remembering what my first two readings were and feeling the exact same way that you feel, like, oh, look at this setup, and then it just fizzles into nothing. And now reading it again, with the hindsight of the way the rest of the series plays out, I think the point that's trying to get made in the first trade is, look at all of this gendered crap on both sides. Not just the men, but also the women. And I think, again, about that scene with Krongus woman representative. That's him being douchey, but it's also her being douchey a little bit. Just a teensy bit. And it's more, look at all of this gendered crap. Fine. I'm going to kill all the fucking men. How much did all of that gendered crap matter in retrospect? Really? How much did it matter? Because at the end of the day, you're all just people working and trying to make the world turn and make governments work and make the phone lines operate. And really, it's all just a bunch of gendered crap. And I only got that on the third reading. And I don't know if that's what he's trying to say here. And if it is, it shouldn't take three readings to get there necessarily. But man, reading it again, not just knowing what happens, because I don't remember any of the details of the next 40 issues, because I think this run was 60 issues. I don't remember much of the next 40 issues. I just kind of remember the ending. And it really just it makes me think, like, this is all bullshit. All of this gendered stuff is so much bullshit. If you could all just be people. I don't know. But maybe that takes three readings to get that out of it, and maybe it's not actually there. If it takes three readings, maybe that's just me putting it into the comic. Could be. I don't know.
Even if it's that, I still don't like the setup of, you know, you thought it was about gender, let's make it about people. It's like, just make it about people.
Then he's still pulling the rug out from under you a little bit. Anyway, what did you guys think of the art? We haven't mentioned that at all.
I think it was fine. It's not, I don't think it's particularly, man, I hate to say it, but it's not like super amazing, you know. I think it's, I don't have any problem with the art.
Pretty much the same here. I mean, I enjoyed it. There was never a point where I couldn't understand what was going on visually, or that I was like, ooh, I don't know about that. At the same time, I did not feel, like, moved. So.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when you make a comic about something touchy like this, and you try to take it on seriously, and not as, like, a satirical joke, then you kind of have to toe a line, you know? Like, if you make it stylized one way or another, is the style then masculine or feminine? And what does that say about the stance of the comic being masculine versus feminine art? You know, so maybe to a certain degree it's playing it safe. But yeah, when I was sitting thinking before the episode about what I would say a scene or a page that stuck out to me was, I got nothing really in terms of art. One that made me laugh was when Yorick asked which monument is the one that's for men. And 355 says guess, and there's the Washington in the background. It's like, oh yeah, perfect. I mean, that's good. That's good frame, or I don't know, placement. I don't know.
I actually did like the countdown stuff. I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, that was pretty.
Yeah. Cool.
And I like the camper on the base of the monument too.
Yeah. I mean, I think as far as like comic book art goes, from a style perspective, it's not like, you know, super amazing or anything like that. But I think it's appropriate for this comic. If it was highly stylized art, I don't think that would necessarily work in this situation.
Yeah, you kind of gotta leave it steady for this, because if you make it washed out, then you immediately think dystopia. But this isn't supposed to be dystopian, I don't think. You know, like any kind of way you stylize it draws it in a particular direction, and I don't think this is supposed to get put in any direction other than reality and genuinely what would happen if this occurred. And I'm just because half the men die doesn't mean it's going to immediately get dystopian, you know, doesn't mean any of these things. It just means there's going to be life moves on, tragedy happened, ta-da, you know? And I think that's kind of the point of this comic, at least in the first trade, is tragedy happens, women are people, people move on from stuff. Some of them deal with trauma better than others, and that's just life. And I feel like by not choosing a specific style or very stylized kind of art, that this comic really helps that stay in the forefront. That this isn't dystopian, this isn't masculine, this isn't feminine, this is just reality, in air quotes, you know?
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I get, from that perspective, I think the art is good. It's the artist that's paired with the story was a good choice.
Yes.
Yeah, it's... There's nothing that really makes you go, oh shit, that's fucking sick. Which, when you say that, seems insulting. It's hard to say that, you know, right?
Right.
But I mean, genuinely, there's something to be said for steady, reliable work and steady, reliable art. And that's what this is. And that's
absolutely.
You know, that's just fine.
It tells the story.
Yeah.
It does what it needs to.
Yeah, and that's okay. That's all good. So, all right, let's ask the question we've been asking for the last two episodes about comics for ladies. David, when your daughter grows up, would you give her this to read?
Yeah, but not because it's, like, for ladies. I would give it to her because it's a well-known, popular, good example of what comics can be. Hmm. But not because it's, like, some kind of feminist... treatise on, you know,
yeah,
just like I said last week, I would give it to her because it's a good comic, not because of any other reasons.
Yeah,
or if she well, I mean, this will become more clear when we get to the ratings. I probably wouldn't be like, yeah, you Dahlia, you have to read Why the Last Man. But if she was like, Dad, is this a good comic, I'd be like, yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah,
so, go ahead and read it.
Oh, question ahead, to follow up. So out of the comics that we have read for this podcasting arc, if you could only choose one to give her, which would it be?
That's Captain Marvel, for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm of similar thinking. Like, if I had to give one of these, if I was thinking about these three comics, and this was a list of three episodes of things to give to your girlfriend to get her into comics, which one of these three would I give my wife? I'd give her Red Sonja and I'd give her Captain Marvel. And if she was like, eh, I don't know, after reading through the first half, I would insist, you know, like, just finish the trade. Finish the Red Sonja trade. The story ends really satisfactorily. Finish Captain Marvel. That story ends really satisfactorily. Those are both great comics. But if she finished the first two issues of Why the Last Man and was like, eh, I don't know, it's not really my thing. As much as I like the run of this comic, it's not something I think I would push on her. I feel like it's so weird, because this one is the one that puts gender issues at the forefront, but I feel like it's the one I would least want my wife to read, not like because I'm trying to hide it from her and keep her in ignorance of women's issues. None of that. I don't mean to go that way. I don't know why my mind went there. But, like, it's just like, this is a good comic, but if it's not your thing, it's not your thing. And if it's really supposed to be gender, this, that, for women, you would think that this would be the one that, if anything else would get a woman hooked, this would be the one to push. But I don't really think it is. I think of the three that we've read, it's Captain Marvel and then Red Sonja and then this.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, these are just our opinions.
Yeah, of course. Your woman might like this much better. I mean, your lady friend, not your woman. You don't own her. Oh, God.
I'm going to tell your wife you said that, Andy.
Oh, word.
What about you, Jen? Would you give this to your husband? Or your...
To my wife?
Yes, to your wife.
To my wife. I would, and I would say you should read this, but... try to ignore all the hype around it, because it will make it better if you do.
Yeah. Well, maybe I will give this to my wife, because I don't think she's ever even heard of this. So that's good. Let's try that.
Yeah, my wife, I'm sure, has probably not heard of it either.
You know what? I'll do an experiment. I'll have her read this, and then I'll talk to her about it and record it, and we'll see what we get from her. We'll do a follow-up for this Comics for Ladies series.
Oh, cool.
Me and my wife. Yeah, because you know what? She has never read this one, and... I feel like the three of us went into this looking for things.
Yeah, we certainly have. I mean, all of us have been exposed to the hype. Like, I haven't read it before this, but like Jen, I've heard a lot about this comic. I would say that I would include my daughter in that special episode, but you know she can't talk yet. So,
well, hey, if you want to get your wife in on it, we can do that.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll ask her.
Anyways, let's get down to the rating this one. All right.
Okay. Yep.
David, you go first.
So, like I just said, this was my first time reading this comic, but I had been exposed to the hype. And I remember, I think we were neighbors at when you were either your first or second reading of this, Andy.
The second, I think.
Because Shelby was reading it, or, I mean, she had the trades.
She has the entire run twice over.
Oh, okay. So, what did I guess I have to give it a number. I don't know, it's kind of hard to rate it because I feel like I need to give it a high rating because it's such a well-known comic, but personally, I think this is like a 3. And it's nothing against Brian K. Vaughan, because I loved Runaways and I love Private Eye. Those are both such good comics, and it's not to say that this is a bad comic, but I don't know, maybe I need to try reading the rest of it, or at least try the next volume, but I just wasn't, like, blown away by this comic. I thought it was fine. It's certainly an interesting premise and everything, but it just didn't, like, draw me in the way that other things that we've read have. So, you know, I think I'm just going to give it a 3. It's not a bad comic, but it's just, me personally, I didn't get drawn into it, and at least in the same way that I've, like, in some of the other comics we've read recently, like Captain Marvel or like Pretty Deadly or something. Mm-hmm. Both Kelly Sue DeConnick comics that I mentioned there, but so I think I'm gonna give it a 3. I certainly wouldn't try to talk somebody out of reading it.
Okay, I'm gonna go next because I want to save the best for last. I gotta say, it's tough for me to rate this because I read the entire shebang and I really did enjoy it. And I'm coming from a different place of having heard the hype, hated it because of the hype, read it again begrudgingly, and then now I'm reading it post-hype. If that's any sense whatsoever. But I really do think my reading is something that I enjoyed. The look at all this gendered crap. And then here's 4 issues of why it doesn't matter, and it's just people dealing with trauma, the way that people would deal with trauma. But I'm fairly certain it's me putting something I want into the comic, because, like, with the Republicans and the Democrats and the White House in this comic, I don't think that's the way that this comic would portray men. I don't think that this world would portray men in the same way. So as much as I want to say... it's just gendered crap, and look at this, is 4 issues of it not mattering because people are people. I mean, it still matters. It obviously still matters. So I guess I'm in my rating admitting that my reading of this comic is flawed, which is unfortunate because that's the reading I want. So for this trade, even though I know that this ends up becoming the hero's journey because it's Yorick and the gendered stuff doesn't matter and it's him and his journey and his quest... and that bit with Yorick and his quest and how the whole world is out for him because he's a man, that all after this is awesome. I encourage anybody even remotely interested in this comic or the hero's journey as a story, please, please keep reading this. But this trade, even going back to it, I'm just not feeling it. So I'm also going to give it a 3. As much as I want to, as much as I know this gets so much better, and as much as I love the way it ends up, I can't give this better than a 3 in the first trade. Sorry, Brian. You're my boy, though. Keep writing Saga. It's great. What about you, Jen?
I'm going to give it a 2.5. It was okay. And so I do want to say that I think probably when I rate a comic each week, that rating is made to a degree in comparison to what we read the previous week, even if it's related or not. That's just kind of how my brain space works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, after coming off of reading Captain Marvel, which I thought was just amazing, and then hearing the hype for this, I don't even know if I felt disappointed, but I felt like I had trouble engaging with the characters and the story. I couldn't suspend my disbelief for long enough, and I don't necessarily think that's the fault of Brian K. Vaughan, and I respect him greatly as an author, so maybe it was just that I read it in the wrong time and place, but I could not feel engaged with this comic, and I don't think I'll read the next one. So, there's that.
Yeah, I keep going back to it. I really think it's unfortunate that this comic constantly... Alright, here's another discussion we can have. This comic is only about gender superficially. The entire run of this comic is about the hero's journey, and Yorick trying to get to Australia to get back to the love of his life. And when you made the comparison to Walking Dead, I think you made the comparison, David, or was it Jen?
That was Jen.
Jen. It was more apt than you thought, because that's a group of people trying to survive in a world where everybody's out to get them. And in this world, this is almost like that, because everybody's out to get Yorick for one reason or another. Whether it's the Amazons who want to kill them, this organization who wants to breed with him to get its army back, or this other organization who wants him for... They all want him for something. And all he wants to do is get to Beth, right? And then there's the moments of doubt. Does she even exist anymore? Has she died? Does she even care about me? Has she moved on? What am I even doing? Like... He goes through a whole journey that is not related to gender, really, in any way. But this comic, unfortunately, gets shoehorned into that role because it's always put on these lists, you know? And it's like, then no matter what, you come to this comic with preconception, and you put things into it, and you find things. And, I mean, I'm saying this not to preach, because I will happily admit that that was my reaction to this first trade the first two times I read it, and they only kept reading it the second time begrudgingly. It's unfortunate, because it's not what this comic is about, really. It's kind of what the first issue of a 60 page run is about. The first issue is about gender, the other 59 really aren't, but it gets put there by people writing articles on the internet, you know? So I, as much as we joke about the comics for ladies kind of lists and title and stigma, for some trades and for some comics, it actually might be a little bit damaging, you know?
Hmm.
Anyway, that's a bit of a rant, I guess. That I honestly didn't, and it's weird, because I didn't even think about that when we were reading Red Sonja and Captain Marvel. But I really am thinking about it now for Why the Last Man, and I really am looking forward to giving this to my wife to read, to see what I get out of her. I can't wait to record that episode. It's going to be good times. Anyway, that's coming up. Eventually. But next week, we're not reading any gendered anything, and I promise not to go on any rants. As a matter of fact, we're going back to the fun stuff. And we're going to do a 3-episode arc on Dracula versus Blade and Friends.
So these are all Marvel. I don't know. I was listening to another podcast where they were talking about Blade, and one of our friends really likes Jubilee, and so
Vampire Jubilee.
Vampire Jubilee comes up a lot. So I was like, you know what? I really want to read Curse of the Mutants, and so I decided. So I kind of built a little arc to go with it. So we're gonna. Do you mind if I'll pitch?
Do it.
I'm gonna do the next arc. So first, next week we're gonna read Blade Undead Again, which is a trade from based on a run by Mark Guggenheim and Howard Chaykin from 2006, and it collects Blade issues 1 to 6. I've never read it. I know that Mark Guggenheim, I think he was either a writer or the creator of CSI Miami.
Yeah,
that CSI Miami. So this could be pretty amazing. The next, following that, we're going to read Captain Britain and the MI-13, Volume 3, which is titled Vampire State. It collects issues 10 through 15 and Annual Number 1 by Paul Cornell. So this comic, unfortunately, this comic ended with the annual, so it only had a 16-issue run. But it was a great comic. I really liked it. It was one that I picked up while it was coming out. So I'm looking forward to rereading that comic. And then finally, we're going to read Curse of the Mutants by Victor Geschler. This is from 2010. It's like an X-Men crossover event. It collects issues 1 to 6 of Curse of the Mutants, and then a couple other tie-ins. But not all the tie-ins. Like, I don't think it gets... There's, like, a Namor tie-in, and there's, like, one about, called, like, Storm and Gambit. So we're not going to get those. So it's just the Curse of the Mutants main trade paperback. But as always, you know, you can look on our website to find out more information about what's coming up. Andy, what is that website that I'm talking about?
www.apsupercast.com.
That's right. And if you prefer to just send us a message directly, you can send us an email at atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com. Andy, you want to give us a rundown of all the social medias?
Twitter.com/APSupercast, Facebook.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com.
Oh, thank you, Andy. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to us. And if you feel like it, give us a rating on
iTunes.
Thank you. So that's it for this week. See you guys later.
Bye.
Bye, ladies.
Ladies.
Yeah. No more ladies here. Boys alone. Boys alone. Welcome to episode 186 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Why.
Why? Why, damn it.